non-rock a boatus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
You're being delusional. I love you, Jeff.
Delusional, yeah. Delusional is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt. She hung up on me.
Yes!
Oh!
What?
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
No, when we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
The Lord has made everything for its purpose, even the wicked for the day of trouble. Proverbs 16:4. It's a good way to start. I just thought
it's a great verse on God's
It is a good verse.
Over all things.
I'm just messing with you. All right, guys, welcome to the Gospel Heard Around the World. This is Apologia Radio. You can get more at Apologia Studios, APOLOGIAST.
There's too many O's in there.
UDIOS, ApologiaStudios.com. And I am Jeff the Ninja. That is Luke the Bear right there.
What is up?
And we're joined in studio live with one of our very good friends, someone we love very, very much, respect, and appreciate. It is Stephen Bancars.
Thanks for having me.
What's up? Just
it feels so good today to not be one of the four ordained to eternal damnation. Oh, it's great. So freeing to know one of the elect.
He really wants to.
Yeah. Stephen mentioned that maybe we can do like a discussion together on Romans 9. You want to do that
today?
Eventually.
I don't know. We'll see what God's saying.
Okay. All right. All right. So someday maybe.
Are you a prophet now?
No.
we love and respect Stephen.
We'll see what God tells me.
You've seen him on our show before. So, hey, a good way to start. Today, by the way, as we get into the show today, this is the 300th episode of Apologia Radio. And apparently that's a very big deal for Isaac.
For Isaac,
because
yes.
He brought donuts today for it. And just, he was at work. He was going to work.
I go work. To work, baby.
I go to work. Oh, my goodness.
He was like, you know, this only happens once.
He goes, you know, the show 300 and only happens once. I was like, wait, so does 287 and show 13 and 15.
No offense to Stephen, but I was like, well, Stephen Bancars is here. We're going to have him on. He goes, that's what you want to do for episode 300?
Okay.
I was like, well, yeah, it's cool. You know, he's like, it only happens once.
It only happens once. He's like, well, I'll bring donuts.
Right.
All right. So, hey, good way to start off episode 300. And by the way, just we're teasing with Stephen. We love Stephen. Love his work. And you guys know that. You've seen him on our stuff before. We'll give you a second if you guys are new to Stephen and his work, his ministry. We'll give you a second to hear from him in a sec, to what he does, where he came from, his testimony. But before we do that, I thought I'd play this, which you might enjoy this, because this is not in any way familiar, and you'll see. Okay, and I haven't let Luke hear this yet. Let me just say this. At first, when I heard this, I thought it was totally a parody.
Oh.
It is not a parody. Okay. Like, it's not a joke. Like, I saw people sharing it, and I was like, I started listening to it, and I was like, this is a joke. Someone is teasing. It's not a joke.
Do we get to comment on it after?
Yeah. Okay, for sure. But no, I want you to, for sure. Please comment. Because I went through the guy's channel and I was like, no, he means it. It's for real. So just keep that in mind, that this is not a parody, all right? Everyone, welcome, by the way, everyone who's watching across the internets all around the world on the live stream. Thank you guys for joining us. And I encourage you guys to go to apologiastudios.com to get more of the episodes, TV show, radio show, all that. Sign up for All Access. And you helped to make everything we do possible, our on-the-street evangelism, which we didn't get a chance to do. I was so excited.
It's actually raining in Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh,
actually, no, it was a bummer because we were scheduled to do it like 11, I don't know, somewhere on there.
I mean, I'm in town.
I know.
I got nothing going on tomorrow or Saturday.
Wait. How long are you in town for?
I'm here till Monday.
Ooh.
Monday evening is when my plane leaves. So I got Friday, Saturday, I'm free.
Maybe Monday afternoon, you and I can go.
Okay, my flight leaves at 4:45, but
maybe
in the morning.
Monday at 11 lunch. Or something like that?
Yeah, sure. I'm out.
Okay, anyway, so but yesterday we canceled the whole evangelism thing at ASU, and then it didn't rain.
Yeah.
When we were supposed to be there.
Oh, it rained all day at my house.
It didn't rain when we were supposed to be there, which is a total bummer. Arizona, by the way, people in Arizona, weird with rain.
Oh,
like,
I know.
People
it's
freak out about the rain. They're like, oh my gosh, it's raining. We can't do this. We can't do that. Isaac's like, we got to cancel the youth group because it's raining.
He did.
He did. He did. He totally did.
I know. I was driving here today and it was raining and literally on the highway.
Isaac's so mad at me right now.
We're on the highway and people were driving 45 miles an hour because it was raining. And I was like, are you serious?
I'm also teasing with my wife too because she sent a message to our family message thread and she was like, oh my goodness, it's raining. I almost didn't make it to get pho with Sailor. I'm like, I mean, you're from Kentucky. You've seen rain before. Like, people in Arizona, we go so long without rain that when it happens, we act like it's the apocalypse completely.
Exactly.
So back to what I was trying to play. The title of the song, this is on YouTube, so you can go find it yourselves. Title of the song is Calvinists Are Not Saved.
Oh, no.
Cover song. Enjoy.
Okay, this song is entitled Calvinists Are Not Saved.
Wait, is that Jerry? Doesn't it sound like Jerry? No, yeah, okay, sorry.
Here goes.
Oh no. Is this Peebo Bryson?
I don't know.
It sounds a little bit like him.
Yeah.
This is a good song, the original.
You gotta get the quality up on this, man. Maybe a little better, or just better background, maybe. Long intro, though.
I love that e-bass he's got going on there.
I had to play the beginning so you can hear him with the intro, so sorry for the long. Here we go.
Standing in line on Judgment Day, waiting for the God of Calvinism to say that I did a good job. But then the real Jesus hurries by and stares at me like I'm an unsaved guy. Then he damned my soul to hell. Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are reprobates, and some things will never change. Calvinists are not saved, it's the way it is. Calvinists are a bunch of stupid idiots, and no, I don't believe that they're saved.
This is for real, huh?
For real.
For reals. How many views does this have?
Only 5,000.
Hey there, stupid Calvinists. You can't go where the others go because you guys are not saved like they are. Trusted in your two.
I love how he stops it because he goes from like the primary to like the background.
I know.
Hold on,
but instead of Jesus Christ, now you get to burn in hell forevermore because Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are reprobates, and some things will never change. Calvinists are not saved, and that's just the way it is. Calvinists are a bunch of stupid idiots. No, I don't believe that they're saved.
Okay, all right. So just so you know, I don't know the man who made this.
Wow,
JaxMac77 on JaxMac on YouTube. But I just want you to know, we want to genuinely thank you because now we have the theme song that we're going to be singing probably all the time for at least the next 2 years. We'll be singing that in the background of Apologia Studios.
Yeah, that was rich.
It's kind of catchy, the chorus.
It was. So just, you know, a little better vocals would do well, maybe. Some backup singers, something like that. But so I thought I'd play that for you.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed
that. Blessed my day.
Good. Yes. Okay. So welcome, everybody. Stephen Bancars, welcome. So 300th episode, we got to do something interesting. But new people to the thread right now, to the live feed, don't maybe know who you are. So let's talk about Stephen Bancars. Who are you and where'd you come from? What are you doing here?
I am a former New Ager. Who got saved by Christ 4 years ago. I used to run one of the largest New Age websites in the world, was a guest author on the largest New Age website in the world, and it was my full-time career, my passion, my hobby, my career, and I got radically saved by Christ. He revealed himself to me and turned my life upside down in a five-minute born-again experience I had with him. And ever since then, I've been in full-time apologetics ministry. And that's my testimony in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And it's been a wild ride. There's a lot of things that I saw when I was in the occult. I like to look at it as the devil overplaying his hand in my life. Mm-hmm. I was exposed to a lot of information that I can now use to formulate counterarguments against some of these worldviews that I had been deceived by, and things that give me credibility with those who are lost in the New Age, such as my out-of-body experiences that I've had, which I believe were initiated by an entity who I saw in a lucid dream, pulled me out of my body. And that's an example of the devil just overplaying his hand, thinking I'm going to lead him further down the rabbit hole, not knowing the plan God had for my life. Mm-hmm. And now I can use that when I talk about that to New Agers. It's like it gives me a voice in their life, because not only am I validating certain aspects of their worldview as having a basis in reality, mm-hmm. which is important apologetically, but I'm also able to say, hey, I experienced this stuff too. Mm. Yeah, the experiences are real, but what's our interpretive standard by which we're going to assess them? And so it's been an amazing 4 years in apologetics ministry. There's been a lot of good fruit that has been produced through the ministry the Lord's called me to.
Right.
And you guys actually had Doreen Virtue here and Melissa, yep. two very yep. close friends of mine. God radically saved her as well. He's really doing something profound in the New Age movement. And it's interesting. We got in contact about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And she ended up saying that my videos gave her the courage to come forward with her
really?
Public. Yeah. Huh.
Wow. That's great.
And I reached out to her. I was like, hey, I just feel like we need to connect for some reason. And it was so interesting for me, because I was able to see her grow in the Lord and go from a believer who still had, you know, confusion as to what is light, what is darkness, what's New Age, and what is biblical Christianity. But just to know she's saved and know the Lord's doing a work, but there's not this clear-cut sanctification that we would hope to expect in an ideal world that took time for her.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But now she's getting her master's in theology in seminary, and she's the most biblically conservative woman that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But her ministry as well has led a lot of people out of the New Age as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
It feels good to be able to be used by God and not be used by the yeah. devil.
I know we've talked about this before, but I'd love to be able to tap into this, because I think you would be profoundly helpful in this area. Coming out of the New Age, coming to Christ, and you mentioned the devil overplaying his hand, and you're having experienced a lot of these things that a lot of times Christians are dismissive of with New Agers, right? That's all in your head, those sorts of things. But you have experience with that whole world. You had one of the most popular New Age websites on the planet. You managed that. You were doing well financially even through that. Mm-hmm. And so you know that world well. So stepping into now the Christian community and now being among God's people in the evangelical West, what are just, and this is like just, I'm throwing this at you on the spot, but what are some aspects of the New Age worldview, practice, lifestyle, what have you, that you see that are just adopted into the Christian community today?
Yeah.
Just people take it for granted and say, well, that's fine. That's no big deal.
That's a good question.
Yeah. There is a study that came out at the end of 2018 from the Pew Research Center.
Okay.
And what they found was that 62% of the American population at large holds at least one New Age belief. And they only tested for 4 New Age beliefs.
Okay.
They tested for reincarnation, the belief that psychics offer reliable insight into the future, the belief in astrology, and the belief that there's spiritual energy in physical objects.
Hmm.
And 62% of the American population believed at least one of these beliefs. Huh. But the study also found that 61% of professing Christians, those who identified on the poll as Christian, also held at least one of these beliefs.
Wow.
Including about a third of Christians, 30%, who confessed to believing in reincarnation.
Wow.
And Hebrews 9:27 says it's been appointed to each man to live once. After that comes the judgment.
Right.
But so from that study alone, there's only 4 New Age beliefs they tested for. And 61% of professing Christians, not all professing Christians are saved. The professing church is different than the actual church.
Right. Which is big in a popular discussion you're going to be involved in after the show today.
Okay.
In terms of profession versus genuine, someone saved.
Absolutely. Yeah. Two totally different things. But if we were to test for all New Age beliefs, there are scores of them. Let's say we tested for 50 instead of just 4. What percent of professing Christians would 95%?
Way up.
90%?
Way up.
So in a general sense, the New Age movement is so popular in our culture right now. We could go through statistics on that, but it's so popular that it ends up leaking into the minds of Christians by osmosis. Just by the fact that we start adopting it, like even the topic of karma, we just use that word, we throw it around.
Right.
It's rooted in the Eastern concepts of samsara and reincarnation. And we think that if we do something, you know, wrong in our life, like if we steal as a teenager, we get stolen from when we're 25 or 30. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have stolen from them.
Right.
Completely overlooking the function of the atonement. There's no biblical basis for that at all. You know, either Christ bore the penalty for our sins or he didn't. There's not going to be some metaphysical mechanism in the universe bringing it back to us.
Right.
That's mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
But examples like this have been so integrated into the West that the church becomes exposed to them and incorporates them just by osmosis without even realizing it.
Right.
And then you do polls like this, you do tests like this, and it's like, wow, there's a lot of Christians who actually adhere to this stuff. Now, within the actual context of church practice, there are a lot of Christians who are practicing something called contemplative prayer, which is a bad thing, which is essentially, it's equivalent in the mechanics to the Eastern practice of mindfulness.
Okay.
So contemplative prayer is a practice that was originated by three Roman Catholic mystics. And essentially what the practice is you're going to choose like a word, maybe a Bible verse, any word you want, and you're going to basically repeat this in your head over and over and over again as a mantra. And the goal is to reach kind of like a pseudo trance-like state where you have this altered state of consciousness. And then they will tell you God is met in that altered state. Right, God isn't known in some object-subject split. God is known in a state of what they would call pure consciousness because God and the self are identical. So this is being like practiced by mainstream evangelicals. And if you look at how this contrasts with Eastern mindfulness, for example, it's the exact same practice. They just throw a Christian label on it.
Right, the repetition of the same word, phrase, over.
And they're calling it prayer when there's no vertical connection made between God at all. You're just using the name of God or some verse as a means to some psychological end.
It's a different tool to the same thing.
Right. Well, it's a self-contained practice. There's no connection made between God. Why is that being called prayer when prayer is supposed to be communion, fellowship with God? God's not involved in that at all.
Right.
And you know, that would be an example, I would say, of where it says in Deuteronomy, when you go in and dispossess these people, do not inquire with them about how they serve their gods. That and say that we may serve our God the same way also. We're not to serve Yahweh like other nations serve their gods. And, you know, this is how Hindus come into contact with Brahman. And mind you, Brahman's impersonal. But if we're trying to use those same methods to contact Yahweh, I would like to know, where are you going in the biblical text to draw, to validate this as being like a safe idea? It's a sin of presumption, thinking that God's going to keep his protective covering over you when you're doing these things.
Right.
He says, whoever sows to the flesh will reap from the flesh destruction, because God will not be mocked. So if idolatry is a work of the flesh, and this is self-idolatry, and it's embedded with a false theology, a false pantheistic theology, if I'm doing that, I'm sowing to the flesh. Biblically, I'm going to reap from the flesh, which means I'm opening myself up to something I don't want to open myself up to. At that point, I'm a spiritual open house, as far as I'm concerned. Because God's under no obligation if I'm engaged in willful sin like that to keep a protective covering of grace over me, maybe for a season. He's long-suffering, but he's not forever suffering, right? And so I think that, well, that's just one example. There's yoga.
Talk about that. That's a big one. Just briefly.
We get
just,
that question a lot.
Yeah, yoga's a big one. I don't know if we even talked about it on the last thing we did with you, but that's a, that's a big one. And it would be beneficial for people to hear, I think.
Yeah. So the word yoga means union.
Okay.
And it's Sanskrit, and it refers to a union between the personal self, the Atman, and the universal self, Brahman. So the goal of yoga is to bring a person into a realization that they are ultimately Brahman. All is God and God is all. To bring the personal self into the union with Brahman is the purpose of yoga. So it's a psycho-spiritual practice, first of all. The physical stretching is a means to a spiritual end. People say, well, isn't yoga just stretching? No. Hindus don't think it's stretching. Hindus know that the postures are meant to be a stepping stone to the real goal, to the real end of yoga, which is spiritual. So some of the postures, for example, the warm-up routine is a sun salutation, right? And a lot of these postures themselves are named after the polytheistic deities of the Hindu faith. And when you hold them, they're meant to invoke the powers, the energies, and the properties of these deities. Same with the hand postures you're holding. It's meant to channel different energies through your body. When you are doing certain physical movements, it's meant to create a free flow of prana or life force energy through the chakras. And the goal of this practice is to reach a state of consciousness called moksha. And moksha is that enlightened state of mind of realizing that the personal self is ultimately an illusion. And that's to live as a personal self and to think that that's your core identity. That's called maya. And it's the cause of all our suffering. And moksha is when you've conquered that state of mind and you realize Brahman is all that there is. Mm-hmm. You know, I am Brahman. And so that state of consciousness, moksha, that is the ultimate goal of yoga, to realize oneself as being God. Mm-hmm. And that's idolatry.
Right.
And these postures that you're using to get there are also idolatrous poses. So you're basically committing idolatry as a means to more idolatry. And what makes it much more dangerous is that when you're in studios, for example, it's oftentimes that people will want to lead you through chanting. Yeah. There will be mind-altering music that's playing. There will be incense that's burning, which is traditionally used to be an offer to the gods. They'll have idols and statues all over their yoga studio. And in a container like that, once again, I would ask the question, like, under what biblical principle would you say God's obligated to keep you protected from the spiritual consequences of being involved in something that is so blatantly pagan? And so people will say, well, can I go home and just do the stretches and just do the routines without being like in a yoga studio? And what I would want to say is, if we know that these postures in sequence, that they're meant to facilitate a shift in consciousness, that they're meant to invoke energies from pagan deities,
right,
and they have a spiritual purpose intrinsically, it's almost like saying, it's almost like a Hindu coming into the church and say, like, I want a snack, so I'm going to have communion as a snack, and I'm going to just strip it of its spiritual significance, and, you know, opt myself out of the judgment of God and just pretend that Paul doesn't say we're drinking condemnation on ourselves, and I just want to snack, I want to despiritualize it, or baptism. I'm going to get baptized, I just want to rinse off. It's like, well, I want to do yoga just for the stretching. Well, why don't we just not do yoga and just do stretching? Because studies have found that ordinary back stretches that you can get from a chiropractor or a personal trainer, for that matter, are just as effective at alleviating back pain as yoga. So I would want to make sure that if we do find benefit in the practice, first of all, the yoga studio's off limits. Any kind of Christianized version of yoga, holy yoga, off limits. If you're doing it in the privacy of your own home, I would encourage people to kind of strip away any of the traditional poses that are used in sequence and, you know, pray into it. Cooperate with God, cooperate with the Holy Spirit if you feel like you need to do some of those certain postures and stretches, but to definitely break away from it as much as possible because it's intrinsically spiritual.
Right.
And once again, whoever sows to the flesh will reap from the flesh instruction, and the Bible says, you know, touch no unclean thing. And that sounds pretty unclean to me.
Yes. It's what I like to try to communicate to other believers who are sensitive in this area and want to continue to practice because it's had, you know, physical benefits for them. So just try to very humbly say, listen, this is an ancient pagan worship practice. So think about it in a different way. What you know is highly offensive to God. Imagine there was an ancient Baal-like worship ritual service. And people down the street had like Baal, like hot Baal worship, or whatever. And you know, you can come in and you can do all these ancient stretches and postures that were of course they were to Baal before, but man, are they good for your knees and back? I would say, would you be interested in going to join the Baal, you know, aerobic situation? And be like, no, I never would do that. It's like, well, it's the You're adopting the same thing in principle. Like, I can strip it. It's like, well, no, not really. It was a worship ritual. It has meaning and practice that's very much on purpose.
We even look at Gideon when God told him to tear down his father's Baal and Asherah pole. He doesn't tell him to just, you know, strip it and then reuse it. He actually tears it down and then rebuilds it completely in a way that's proper worship that honors God. He's not just using those same things. He's completely rebuilding it.
So I remember when we were at recently, you and I were in Kauai. Man, Kauai is inundated with the New Age. Like, it's very, very dark and It's a very hard place to plant a church. Some people I see have made comments like, oh, yeah, you guys planted a church in Kauai. I know why you did that. It's like, well, because it's desperately in need of solid churches, desperately in need of solid churches. That's a known thing on the island of Kauai, and the New Age is massive. It's a massive movement there. It's very, very dark spiritually, very, very dark. And I think that has a lot to do with the New Age practices that are going on there. A lot of demonic influence on the island of Kauai in ways that we could do a whole show on. But when we were there last time, I remember they had just tons of advertisements all over the island for Kundalini yoga.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, which is technically a different kind of yoga. That'll right. get you know, so hatha yoga is what people are normally practicing at
okay.
ordinary yoga studios, but Kundalini yoga is it's a different kind of yoga
okay.
that does get practiced. If an instructor says one day we're doing a Kundalini yoga session, mm-hmm. a Christian who hasn't researched this stuff won't know the difference. Now, a Kundalini experience is supposed to be one where there's like this serpent of energy that exists kind of at the base of the spine by the root chakra, and this serpent of energy will work its way up the chakras, the seven energy centers in the body,
okay.
up to your crown chakra and illuminate your third eye. And when it illuminates your third eye, the pineal gland, that's believed in the New Age movement to be kind of the point at which soul meets body,
okay.
the kind of connection point between mind and brain, if you will.
Okay.
And so when that becomes activated through a Kundalini experience, a Kundalini awakening, you now have supernatural power, supernatural insight into the spirit world because you have that connecting point now activated and charged spiritually.
Mm.
And but there's a lot of symptoms that come as a result of a Kundalini awakening that are very, you know, suggestive of demonic oppression and possession. Things like nightmares, things like vomiting, things like hallucination, things like seizures. Things like being able to read minds. In yoga, a side effect of practicing even hatha yoga properly, there are what are called primary and secondary siddhis. And these are believed to be supernatural attainments that come as a result of right practice of yoga. And some of these siddhis, some of these attainments you can achieve if you practice yoga correctly, okay. are things like being able to look into the future or look into the past, being able to see what the gods are doing in the spirit world, being able to leave your body and go into the body of another person,
mm-hmm.
being able to read people's minds, having supreme lordship over everything in your life, being able to leave your body at will or die at will. And these are just the natural consequences wow. of practicing yoga, along with a Kundalini awakening, Kundalini effect, which, you know, my question would be, is this not evidence that there is some intrinsic spiritual component to yoga, if when you practice it correctly, you're encountering certain abilities that the Bible would liken to be only possible through demonic oppression, like Acts 16:16, for example.
Yeah.
So there's some very dangerous consequences to practicing this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it goes back to making sure we're just staying away from what God calls sin,
mm-hmm.
what God calls an abomination, because I'm not above deception. We're not above deception apart from his protective covering
mm.
and apart from the revelation of his spirit. And if I'm putting myself in a position like that, I want to make sure I'm not testing the Lord. If he's giving clear instruction in his word to stay away from the practices of pagan nations, to flee from idolatry, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Christians are opening themselves up. At the very least, they're weakening their faith. They're grieving the spirit. And I think that's a slippery slope into you know, dangerous theology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely encourage people to stay away from yoga. There's no positive reason to do that,
mm-hmm.
to go into a yoga studio to practice yoga other than the back stretches. Just do back stretches. Mm-hmm. Go to a personal trainer. Google. Go YouTube. Back stretches.
There's professional stretchers. I mean, yeah, I mean, you don't have to do yoga to get just a really, really great stretch. Like my whole life, martial arts since 4 years old, intense stretching, some pretty abusive stretching from my martial arts instructors. Martial arts I was involved in was all combat. It was just strictly combat martial arts systems, so none of the spiritual, crazy, you know, root stuff. And I remember I thought I was at maximum flexibility. I could do splits both ways, and nope, I didn't even feel it. It was just, you know, ridiculous. And then I had this woman, she came to a martial arts tournament. She's really well known. She was hired on to stretch the American Olympic team. So she would travel around the world and just stretch our Olympic teams. whenever they're doing stuff, and even in the U.S. And I told her, I was like, there's just no way you're going to teach me new stretches that I haven't done before. Mm-hmm. Someone's done to me. She's like, okay, get on my table. And she did things to me I didn't know existed. There was like stretch postures and things. And I was screaming like I was a public event. I'm just like howling because she tore me up. But so you don't have to do yoga to get flexible. She wasn't doing any yoga with me. Right. It was just pure medieval pain.
Yeah. And you don't have to do yoga to wear yoga pants either. You can still wear them without going to the classes.
Or don't wear them.
Which, you know, we'd not recommend that either. But
yeah, just kidding.
Especially dudes.
Please, dudes.
Yes.
Okay, so just a quick question. I don't know if you know a lot on this. I'm tossing it out.
You should maybe go to break first and then.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Okay, let's do it. So we're halfway here, guys. I'm going to ask a question. I'll start it now because it's a popular form of conversation. I don't know a lot about it, actually. The Enneagram?
Yeah. I was going to ask the same question.
I don't know a lot about it either, but I have commentary on it.
Commentary would be good because it'd be good to sort of address that. We're going to have to maybe do something more detailed in the future on this because it's a popular thing right now and actually a big in a lot of churches.
Yep,
so we're going to talk a bit about it, get some of Stephen's commentary on it. So stay with us, guys. Be right back after this commercial break. Be sure to go to ApologiaStudios.com to get more. Sign up for All Access, guys. When you do, you make everything we do possible. If it's out doing abortion mill ministry, you're helping with that. You're seeing that content. If it's out doing evangelism at ASU, whatever the case is, traveling the world doing debates, you who are All Access, you're our partners. You make it all possible. And also, don't forget to go to Stephen Bancar's website, which is
ReasonsForJesus.com.
ReasonsForJesus.com. Guys, go check him out. We love Stephen. Grateful for him and his work. Here it is again. Did you see it come up already?
No.
Okay. Every single show. We have to say this, and it's goes back to what we're thinking, talking about in terms of like Christians today not being willing to think and learning to think critically.
Sure.
You know, not that this person was, you know, making anything. So, okay.
she's still
there. This behind us, we're Trinitarians. We're Reformed. We're Calvinists. We're confessional Christians. We have like the premier expert on right now against the occult and the new age and paganism and pagan practice and ritual. We just spent the last half an hour talking about the dangers of all these spiritual practices and the occult and all the rest. Do you really think, respectfully and with all humility, do you really think that we would do all that with an occultic pagan symbol behind us? And the answer is, you just have to think about it. No, we absolutely wouldn't. So this is an ancient symbol of the Trinity used by Christians to describe the triune nature of God. Have pagans adopted it? Have pagans tried to use it for whatever purposes? Sure, that's happened. But this is actually a very powerful symbol Christians specifically wanted to use to describe the distinction in persons and yet the unity of the same substance. So the issue of the same substance, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit of the same essence or substance is a very important aspect of Christian theology, and that is what the Trisetra, the ancient symbol of the Trinity, is. And I assure you that it is not an occultic symbol and that we are just secretly trying to sneak in because we're working for what's the organization?
Kundalini.
What are those people say that person's
Illuminati.
Illuminati. Yeah. So that's it. So guys, commercial break. Be right back here. More on Apologia Radio, the gospel heard around the world. Stephen Bancars, Luke the Bear, me, Jeff, and be right back. All right, guys, welcome back to Apologia Radio. ApologiaStudios.com is where you guys go to get more of the TV shows, the radio shows, the Apologia Academy, the after shows. All of that, guys, is there at ApologiaStudios.com. Don't forget to go to ReasonsForJesus.com, ReasonsForJesus.com to get more from Stephen Bancars. A couple things during the break. I think there's good questions to answer, so thank you guys for putting them in. Let's see here. Somebody asked the question. I had brought up the issue of martial arts and my training in martial arts. And this is the question: how is doing martial arts for combat different than doing yoga for stretching? It's a very important question. It's actually a good question, and I think I should address it. It's because it's actually really important to understand distinctions. There are martial arts systems that you absolutely should not engage in. You just can't. They were started on the basis of an antithetical worldview to the biblical worldview. They were started with, they were rooted in paganism, mysticism. They were rooted in an unbelieving or pagan view of the universe. And so you do have systems. I'll just throw one that should be easy for everyone to sort of grab hold of. Tai Chi is something that's just, it's root, the very bottom of the system. Everything about it is from a particular foundational worldview. So the movements themselves, what you're trying to harness, all of that is the chi. I mean, the chi, the internal power, working through the system, all that stuff you're trying to send out into the world, everything is rooted in that worldview, and it cannot be detached. You can't do Tai Chi in a meaningful way. I think Tai Chi stinks anyway as a martial arts, by the way, but it's not an effective martial art. It's truly just paganism looking like a martial arts system, but it's an ineffective martial arts system to begin with. So if somebody says, well, I'm going to detach the spiritual aspects of Tai Chi just to do the movements and the martial arts system of Tai Chi, I'd say, well, it's not an effective fighting system, period. And the movements are not really that helpful. You're not like what Steven's talking about in terms of you can find better stretching elsewhere, more helpful things. So yes, there are martial arts systems that I would say you must stay away from, and Christians should not practice. Tai Chi is one of them. But there are martial arts systems that are just simply combat arts. So martial means combat. Combat arts. That were just created for the battlefield. They were created for combat, for self-defense. And if somebody says, well, I don't really know how there's a distinction, I would say, well, is the psalmist doing okay when he says, blessed is the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle? What's the training the hands for war and the fingers for battle? What is that? Martial science, martial combat, martial arts? Martial arts. So you have examples of even praise to God for training in combat, combat itself. In a fallen world, yes, combat can be actually a righteous and godly thing. Learning how the human body works, how to essentially manipulate the human body, how to take it apart in a way that protects others is a righteous thing in a fallen world. In a world that's not fallen, do you need combat systems? No. But in a world that is fallen, are there righteous forms of combat? Yes. So there are systems of combat. And you really need, if you were going to a martial arts school with your son or your daughter, and you are going to, say, start a good karate program or whatever, Thai boxing or whatever, you really do need to ask questions of the instructor. You need to ask them, like, are you into the spiritual aspect of martial arts? Because we are very opposed to that. We will not engage in any of that. And we want to let you know that up front. Ask those questions, because I would say the numbers of people who are really involved in the spiritual aspect, from what I know, being in an industry for so long, is actually really low. Most people are just doing it for the combat aspect of it. They have no idea of even the history of the martial arts system itself, much less understand the spiritual nature of it. But you should ask those questions, because you will run into the guys who are just dead set, just very dedicated to the spiritual aspect. I remember that I was teaching for a guy. His school was crashing and burning locally, and he's probably about a month away from closing. And so I used to help guys kind of get their schools back on track when I was, you know, young, 19, 20 years old. And I remember I went in to teach for this guy and to help him get his school back on track. And this guy did combat taekwondo, which is what I did. And he did some other system, but he also did Tai Chi. And he had this Tai Chi master from China that he would come out and he like worshiped this guy. Just an adoration. And all, it was all about his worldview. Yeah. Well, what was interesting is that he would just, you'd be in the middle of a conversation, this is kind of funny, you'd be in the middle of a conversation with him, just talking about normal things like, hey, what'd you have for lunch today? He's like, I went over to Taco Bell and I had, and he would just, in the middle of conversation, he would just all of a sudden stop and he would just, and start like, you know, moving. And his eyes would kind of roll back in his head, and he would just sort of just like in the middle of a random conversation. It was kind of embarrassing. He'd bring people like to talk to him. He'd be like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. And you just start randomly, like, you know, pulling.
How is that not the same as the Pharisees enlarging their garments and praying in the streets?
Yeah, yeah. It's just this boasting of a spiritual. Yeah, very much so. Oh, and so, God. But situations like that, there was a guy, he knew what Tai Chi was. He knew the system. He understood the worldview, and he was implementing it every day of every part of his life. Listen, the Tai Chi wasn't something he just did on the mat. It was something that was going with him to Taco Bell.
Right.
Right. So there has to be categories here and distinctions.
That's right.
In terms of, like, thinking about the category of martial arts. That's a combat system. You better be thankful for combat systems, because we need law enforcement officers to use combat systems on the guy who kidnapped and raped the 8-year-old girl, and they caught him in the room. Do you want them to go in there willy-nilly? Or do you want them to be trained in combat and pain compliance systems, arm bars, chokeholds, those sorts of things, guards, to be able to take down an evil man like that to bring him to justice? No, you need combat systems. So when you hear the word martial arts, you can't just say, oh, Tai Chi's a martial art, so therefore all martial arts are about that. Completely different categories. But yoga, not the same. Mm-hmm. Yoga wasn't started, and no system of yoga is started merely on the basis of the stretches.
No.
It doesn't have that origin story. It works through that line the whole way through. It always moves back to that foundation. Whereas if you're talking about a combat system of karate, it has no attachment to this over here, this worldview of Tai Chi and that whole system. You're talking about, even, like, it's kind of funny. A lot of this is, it's almost like maybe we should try to change things a bit. There are some traditional systems of karate that still, it's kind of funny. Like when I went to the Junior Olympics, and I went for a traditional karate, like the old school real karate systems. And you see people like the Junior Olympics karate systems, and they're using weapons, but they're using their farming tools. They're old. That's what the Japanese were doing. Like, when they created their system of martial arts, they were farmers defending themselves. So they're using, like, hoes and pickaxes and, like, whatever the case. You have people in the 20th century, like, you know, white Americans, like, with, like, these Japanese gardening tools. They're like, yo, like, so, like, that's just because that's where it comes from. It wasn't from, like, you know, a worship service. So that's why they're still using, like, even the size with
Timbrugen kids.
No, the Raphael. Raphael from Ninja Turtles. He used the size. Yeah. So we have to be able to think as Christians in terms of categories. And I'll just say one last thing. Somebody said Calvinism is false teaching. Also, beware of their beliefs. They don't evangelize because they believe that if you're not one of the elect, you're going to hell. Is that what the Apologia Studios feed looks like a church that doesn't evangelize? See a lot of that happening with us, or how, I don't think so. So,
and just, one thing in defense of that too, is that, yeah, everyone believes if you're not elect, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of defining elect to be the elect. Does that mean being a part of a corporate body? Does it mean to be unconditionally or conditionally elect? But everyone believes if you're not the elect, you're going to hell.
That's right. Yeah. There you go.
Thank you, Stephen.
There you go. Thank you, Stephen.
Somebody mentioned Irish stick fighting, which I laughed about.
Irish stick fighting?
Which I'm pretty sure there's nothing spiritual about that. That's just,
probably not.
That's just sin. It's just sin. I'm going to just maul
probably
your face.
Probably just people mauling people.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Our friend Douglas Wilson recently did something on combat sports and women in combat sports. I'm thinking of actually doing a video in response to Doug, even though we love Doug. He's our buddy. Just disagree with him on some points there. I think it'd be helpful to talk about, because MMA is all the rage and all the rest. But I was thinking about doing that, because we love Doug, but we're going to disagree on some points, and I think it just,
we're not going to ban you if you mention his name.
No, he can be named here for sure. Okay. And
you're going to ask the same question. Yeah.
Am I saying, by the way, see,
I don't
this
know
is how little
it.
I know about it is, yeah. I don't even know if I'm saying it right.
That's what it's called. I actually know just as little as you do.
Okay.
So this is one thing I put off to the side because it stirred up a lot of controversy in the body of Christ, and I know if I take a peek at it, it'll end up being a full-blown research project, and I'm working on a different research project right now. So that's not something I can tackle at this moment in time. I've seen some quotes from the originator of the Enneagram that are really disheartening and that do seem to have very clear worldview problems that lean toward pantheistic theology, identification of the self with God, affirming the self as being divine. And I don't know how much of that theology of his plays into the actual Enneagram itself. I don't know how much of that philosophy that he carries is actually pertinent to the Enneagram, which I believe is a personality test. So it could be very well demonic, and I'm just unaware of it because I haven't looked into it enough.
Yeah.
I've also seen on the other side of the spectrum, there are Christians who are opposed to personality tests in general, mm-hmm. altogether, or anything psychological mm-hmm. in nature altogether, that means you're operating out of the wisdom of the world or something mm-hmm. because you study human behavior mm-hmm. or want to apply the studies of human behavior to yourself to have a better understanding of why you tick the way you do or mm-hmm. why your anxiety functions as it anxions or functions as it functions. And it's like, I don't like that kind of dogmatic rejection right. of basic human research into the human brain.
Yeah.
So the Enneagram doesn't seem to be that. It seems to be something more spiritual in nature. It
seems to be tied to astrology from what I understand.
Okay. Yeah.
That's about the extent.
We'll have to get into it. I didn't know if you'd seen, because that's floating in your wheelhouse in terms
it
of
is, absolutely.
People bringing that up saying,
totally.
What connection is there, right. all that stuff. So
now, yeah. I actually would lean more toward the idea that psychology is something important mm-hmm. that we can incorporate, not to necessarily solve problems in our life, but to help us understand why they're there. If there's problems with how we're functioning mentally or emotionally, why is this happening? You know, mm-hmm. how does the fight or flight response work in me? How does the brain store trauma? Mm-hmm. How do, I deal with shame mm-hmm. or guilt? If I've adopted some really core beliefs about myself that have been driving and motivating my behavior that come from some past trauma I experienced as a kid or as a teenager or something.
Have you read anything on Newthetic counseling?
On what kind of
Newthetic?
Newthetic. No, I haven't heard.
We
of
have
Newthetic.
Some books here we can give them before we go.
I believe
you'll
so.
Really enjoy this.
Remind me, I'll check.
It's essentially an attempt to provide biblical foundation and grounding to
cool.
all of these problems.
Awesome.
And my seizure made me lose some memory issues. They're still coming back. Who's the author?
Jay Adams.
There you go. Jay Adams. His book, Competent to Counsel, is a good place to start. He gives you kind of a story of where he began in terms of study, psychological, all those different things, going into some of the worst places mm-hmm. to try to help and to do it from a biblical perspective. It's mm-hmm. actually pretty compelling stuff.
Awesome.
Newthetic counseling just essentially means biblical counseling, but it's operating in all of these areas.
That's great.
How do you properly apply?
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And a lot of Christians are opposed to that in general because
right.
they're scared of anything that isn't that they can't find in Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of can find these principles in Scripture.
They're there, for sure.
Yeah, like yeah. an example would be yeah. like, whoever commits adultery destroys his own soul.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like, what actually happens if I'm being promiscuous sexually? Mm-hmm. How does that compile and affect me over time?
Right.
Physiologically and psychologically.
All
over time?
The consequences of the sin.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the Bible says, confess your sins to one another that you may be healed. There's something that happens in confession. There's a release that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Bible tells us that these things are really important for us. It doesn't necessarily outline what the mechanics of this stuff is, mm-hmm. How it plays out psychologically. But I believe one of the many reasons God puts commandments in place is for the purpose of protecting us against the consequences of what the sin would have,
of course,
on our mind, on our emotions,
right?
It's extremely destructive. And
right.
if I need help sifting through that, going to, like you said, biblically based counselor
mm-hmm.
or reading biblically based counseling material mm-hmm. to help me understand just why and how mm-hmm. it's impacted me, so that I can bring awareness and understanding and break through to the other
yeah.
side.
That's
I mean,
right.
that's something that I think Christians should be taking advantage of as something God has blessed
yeah,
people with.
Yeah, Luke and I would totally agree. From the very beginning, we've tried to. Our context of planning Apologia Church was in a very tough context mm-hmm. with a lot of people who were really broken, really hurt. And at the hospital I was a chaplain at, it was all sort of a funnel. I was a chaplain at the hospital. People were coming to Christ. I was ministering to them there. When they exited, they were coming to Apologia, and they were part of our church. So it was just this flow of like awful counseling experience, right? Every day, the worst of the worst stories. And then they would flow to us. So we were having as soon as they were out, they were being discipled and counseled. And we do, as Christians, have to have a biblically grounded response to the issues of trauma mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. So, for example, like this video that I shared yesterday, which was just horrific. Goodness gracious. Man kidnaps eight-year-old girl. I was actually thinking about this last night, quite a bit, what you and I are talking about right now. I didn't even know this was going to come up. This man is on the street. She's walking her daughter down her own neighborhood street for a 6:30 at night stroll. It's the light's still out. And this guy pulls up, kidnaps this eight-year-old girl right out of her mom's arms, just drives off. Thank God there was a neighbor who had like a Nest or Ring cam.
Oh, is that how they got
him? That's how they saw his car. But he had her for 8 hours. And the video footage, the chest cam stuff, body cam stuff came out of when they actually went and caught the guy. They pull him out of the hotel room. He's naked and big dude. And they go into the room looking for the girl. There's blood on the bed. It was just a horrible, horrible thing to think about. But I was thinking about this in terms of Christians have to be able to work in this area biblically because you have a little eight-year-old girl like that. She's going to deal with trauma mm-hmm. from being snatched out of her mom's arms. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot to deal with those images yeah. and that memory. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to do it biblically, not secularly
right.
and humanistically. Mm-hmm. It has to be a biblical approach
right.
or she's never going to heal.
That's right.
Like Absolutely. She's got to be able to contextualize that experience in the framework of God's world and God's power and providence and his character
that's right.
and his ability to have victory over the evil in this world. Mm-hmm. You can't, listen, a humanist, I say, has no ability to really help someone like that mm-hmm. because all you're going to do is just put Band-Aids over trauma mm-hmm. and never provide a ground from which fruit can start that's to grow exactly and right. life can come out of again. You know, this little girl, she spent 8 hours with this devil, this monster, and none of us could possibly understand what she went through. Eight hours with this evil, evil monster. And that's going to be some serious trauma she's going to have to manage. And Christians have got to become conversant in this area
right.
To be able to not, because here's what tends to happen is people will see from a church perspective, a Christian perspective, well, we've got to really be able to address these issues of trauma. Like, how do you talk to the girl that mm-hmm. was passed around from foster home to foster home and raped numerous times in each home? Like, I had that in front of me more than once. How do you actually deal with the girl who was raped for 8 years by her grandfather? You know, that's some serious trauma. Like, how do you deal with the guy who watched the Mexican mafia throw his best friend into a wood chipper? You know, that was right in front of me. He was like, yeah, I'm struggling with like the visuals. Like, I'm having nightmares of what mm-hmm. I watched them do to my best friend. So people tend to say, it's like, look, this is real trauma. And if we're not addressing it as a church, people go, let's just go to the psychology, the psychiatric, you know, perspective that's secularist and humanist. And let's go from that perspective. And then you're just totally abandoning Christ, biblical worldview stuff, and you're just mm-hmm. dealing with Band-Aids. Yeah. Or people go the other direction, like, all that's hooey, all that's, you know, who cares, unnecessary to really to create a field that's meaningful and biblical. Let's just say it's the Bible. Like, it's like, wait, you got to get, the Bible provides a grounding, and this is the last word I'll say here, I know I've been saying a lot. The Bible provides a grounding that gave us science. Right? It didn't mm-hmm. tell us EMC squared. Mm-hmm. It didn't tell us all the details of our own galaxy and the rotation of the planets and all the rest. It doesn't do that, but it provided the ground from which science was possible because you have the principle of induction, you have an ordered universe that can be depended upon, you have logical consistencies, laws of logic, immaterial, invariant, all those things, human dignity and value, all that stuff mattered. So science comes out of there. Modern medicine comes out of the biblical worldview. I'll just give you one last word on this. Kind of cool story is that if you ever go to get surgery, this is one of my favorite stories. If you ever go to get surgery today and they put you to sleep for your surgery, and Marcus is probably really happy for this one. He's having a heart surgery in a little bit. You can praise God for the biblical worldview. Thank God for the book of Genesis when you're put to sleep in surgery today. The reason you're put to sleep in surgery today is because the father of anesthesiology who put people to sleep was reading in his Bible the account of Genesis for his devotion, his daily devotional, and he comes to the part where it says that God puts Adam to sleep to pull his rib to create woman, and he thought to himself, now if God does a major surgery on a human being and he puts him to sleep, to do the surgery, to do this painful thing. Yeah. He says, why aren't we doing that? And so he tried to create a way to put human beings to sleep to do surgeries. So again, you can thank the biblical worldview for providing the grounding of all this different thought and perspective. And the same thing goes in this area of trauma and counseling laws. It provides the worldview, the framework through which you can do all these things.
The other thing that's helpful is a strong view in God's sovereignty. Mm.
That's right. That's true. That is true. That is true.
And remembering too that when we were purchased with the blood of Christ, he purchased all of us, right? And he wants to redeem all of us, including our gifts, our passions. There's some people who have been blessed with the gift of understanding human behavior and the passion for studying human behavior. Mm. And if God has redeemed this individual, does God expect them to placate and shelf all of their skill set for the rest of his life and just work at McDonald's the rest of his life?
Right.
Or does God want to redeem his skill set and his passion that he put in him and use it for his purposes and the good of his church? And if it can be biblically grounded, which it can, then that's something I think we should be more resourceful in, not afraid of. Mm.
So a good conversation to have too, because in terms of when people hear, and we need to get into the Enneagram and all that stuff and try to figure out background and before we talk about it publicly in terms of dissecting it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I hopefully what people will hear here is not the typical sort of fundamentalist separated view of like, well, all these things are just evil, so separate, get away. And, you know, no, we're not saying that. We're saying that we have to make sure that we're thinking critically as Christians and with proper categories. If that's something is fundamentally flawed and occultic at its base, at its root, then we need to burn that house down.
Yep.
Not try to sort of like put Jesus into its steps.
Right.
Like, you know, you can't take yoga, an ancient pagan ritual, and all of a sudden just rename the poses something about Jesus, like Sarah's pose, you know, or something, you know, like that, or, you know, or Ezekiel.
Moses poses.
Ezekiel and the doo-doo, like you're laying down or something. It's just, you know, you can't Moses pose. It took me a second to get that one.
That's funny.
Moses poses. So, yeah, it is, there's a importance in categories. All right, guys, so I think time's up, right?
All right. Pretty much.
So, Stephen Bancars, thanks for joining us, brother.
Thanks for having
me. You are going to be on with Jeremiah Roberts and Andrew.
Absolutely.
To do Cultish.
Can't wait.
And can't wait for you to do that as well. And hopefully we get to do some this week, too, before you go.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Stephen Bancars, reasonsforjesus.com. Don't forget to go to apologiastudios.com. Get more content there, guys. That's Luke the Bear.
Also wanted to mention our Thanksgiving sale on the store at shop.apologiastudios.com. We have 20% off sale our merch through the rest of November. So you can go there, check it out. We got a bunch of shirts, hats, stickers, all kinds of goodies. So yeah, check that out. 20% off through the end of November.
All right, guys. Thank you guys for watching. This is the Gospel Heard Around the World, Apologia Radio. Thank you guys. Catch you guys next week.